would have been a perfect place to end the story right there. But then there is this older brother, the one who stayed home, the one who worked hard, the one who followed the rules, that hears after he's been working in the fields all day that the party has begun and the very best fatted calf has been cooked. And the older brother is mad. He's angry. Maybe not so much that his brother has come home, but his father didn't even ask him to say he was sorry. It's like all those years of hurt, all that money wasted seemed like nothing. And he would not go in. The father goes out, and he pleads for his son to come in, and he hears the anger of the older brother. This son of yours, can't even call him brother, this son of yours devoured the money, and you throw him a party. In answer to all that hurt, all that anger, the father simply says, "Son, you have always been with me. All that I have is yours." Fred Craddock, who is a famous preaching professor, once said that this prodigal story is the most preached story in the New Testament. And there was a study done and found that 85% of the sermons were from the perspective of the younger brother. But research was done and found that 85% of the people in the pews identify with the older brother. I wonder if that may be true in our pews. We're the older brothers and sisters, the ones who follow the rules, the one that worked in the food kitchen, the one who do welcome, the one that bring presents to the Larkin kids at Christmas, that do hard work, that try to be good, that are here on a morning that beckons us to be outside drinking a cup of coffee or reading the New York Times. You can imagine his anger at how that younger brother was welcomed back like nothing had happened. You can hear those older brothers' words, "What about me? I did the work. I slaved for you. And there's not one bit of thank you for me." The father reminds him, wants him to hear that he has always been loved. That it doesn't mean that because he's home, I love you any less. I have enough love for both of you. I don't love you because of what you've done, but because you're mine. That's a parent's love. It's a love that's stronger than what is fair. It's not dependent on one's behavior. It speaks of a God who refuses to love us as we deserve, but can't be prevented from loving us as we need. I've been rereading a book called Gilead by Marion Roberts lately. It's a book of a really long, it's called Gilead, a really long, somewhat rambling letter of 77-year-old pastor named John Ames in Gilead, Iowa, who has a son late in life. He's about 77 years old, and he wants to write to this young son, who's 7 when he writes it, the story of his life, his begats, his history, that the son can read long after he has died. The story tells about a life that is lived within the confines of a small town. It's about a life lived with anger and tension and faith all mixed in. It's a story of a fiery abolitionist grandfather and a pacifist son. It tells a story about God's presence in the ordinary. It's though he needs to tell his son that there are joys and wonder in this everyday life. It's kind of what the father was trying to tell the oldest son. In the story, the father writes, "I have loved the peacefulness of an ordinary Sunday. It's like standing in a newly planted field or garden after a warm rain. You can feel the silence and the invisible life. All you need is to give it room and not to trample on it. And it was such a quiet, ordinary day. Rain on the roof, rain in the ground, rain on the windows, which is a gift because we don't seem to have much rain around here. See, I hear him telling the older brother, don't take for granted the hours you spent with your father, working side by side, watching crops grow, living through the seasons year by year. You didn't have to have big parties and big cities to know my love. I hear Marilyn Robinson reminding me to never negate the joy of just being here every Sunday, hearing those assurance of pardon, hearing the music and the beep, beep from the garage going on at the same time, of sitting in these magnificent pews and then really looking at them and thinking, oh, they do have some marks on them, and they creak when I sit down, but they're well worn. And God's love is a love that loves you even if you're a bit worn and squeaky yourself. God doesn't come because we're worthy or we're perfect. It's about God coming through us, to us through grace. It means coming with the hopes of forgiveness and celebration, that we will become the ones who forgive and can be forgiven. What's astounding to me and what the kids picked up is we don't know if that older brother went into the party or not. We know that the love of the father was big enough for both of them, and that the love of one brother didn't make the love for the other any less. So maybe it's left open where we put ourselves in this story. Maybe sometimes we're the older brother and sometimes the younger brother. Maybe sometimes we like this forgiving God, but we don't really like it when it's forgiveness for everyone. For in our families, we know that there are those that we really cannot forgive, that have hurt us in such a way that we can't welcome them back with those open arms. Sometimes the best you can do is to leave that person to God's love. I know in the past I've had a hurt that is so great that I just could not let it go. I mean, you could say that person's name and it would well up in me and become big like a flame. And then I had to learn that every time I felt that flame growing, I'd say, God, I just have to give you this person. And it would get a bit smaller. And I would long for the day that I could forgive them. But you know, God's love is big enough for that. In the same book, there is a friend of John Ames. He's the one we read the story about. And he names his son after him, John. John Jack Boughton, the son of the friend who was the Presbyterian minister in town. And John baptized him, but he honestly didn't like that boy who was called Jack. John says of him, I don't know how one boy could cause so much disappointment without giving out an ounce or a ground for hope. He just is not a lovable boy. Jack comes back as a grown man to make peace with his father and hopes for some healing, but it cannot be done. Jack comes to John Ames, the one he was baptized for, looking for some peace and some answers, and John cannot give it to him. The word gets back to John that Jack is leaving town without making peace with his dad. And John Ames goes to the bus stop to find him to have one last word for him. And the story goes as such. The morning I saw Jack Boughton walking up to the bus stop, looking like his clothes didn't fit him, carrying a suitcase that weighed nothing, I called him and asked him to wait for me, and I walked with him to the bus stop. My first thought is no one should look as lonely as he does. He stopped and said to me, you know, I'm doing the worst possible thing I can do. I'm leaving now, and my father's wife will never forgive me. She says, this is your masterpiece. This truthfully a dreadful thing that I'm leaving my father to die without me. It's the kind of thing that only his father could forgive him. I understand why you have to go, I really do, said John. He said, then you wouldn't mind saying goodbye to my father for me? He goes, yes, I will. I certainly will. And John Ames said, do you think I can bless you? And Jack said, well, what exactly does that entail? Well, as I envisage it, I would put my hand on your forehead and I would pray for you. But if that's too embarrassing, he goes, no, no, no. Go ahead. It doesn't matter. And we sat on the park bench and he took off his hat and he put it on his knee and he bowed his head and he seemed to rest it against my hand. And I said the words from Numbers. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and to be gracious to thee. The Lord lift up his countenance to you and give you peace. There could be nothing more beautiful than that or more expressive of my feelings. Certainly it was sufficient for the day. And then when he didn't open his eyes or lift up his head, I went on. Lord, bless John Ames Boughton, this beloved son, brother, husband, and father. And then he sat back and looked at me, and it looked like he was waking from a dream. Thank you, Reverend. He said in his tone that made me think that maybe I'd name things that he didn't want named. And that was absolutely from the furthest thing I wanted to do for him. Well, anyway, I told him it was an honor to bless him. And that was certainly true. In fact, I'd gone through seminary, been ordained, and I had all these intervening years for just this one moment. John Ames gives Jack over to God's blessing, to God's love, to God's forgiveness, to a God who refuses to give us the love we deserve, but can't be prevented to give us the love we need. May we seek God's healings and blessings upon our lives. May we hear this story told by Christ anew, a story of our own families, of our own lives, of younger and older brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers. May God keep us and others safe when it feels like we are far from God's ways. May God give us and others the wisdom to come to ourselves and to come home. May God meet us and others with bountiful love that runs out and greets us on the road before we can even speak. May God give us hope beyond our hurting hearts. May God give us and others strength to come to the celebration, rejoicing that God's love is bigger than we imagine, and there is enough for all. May it be so. Amen.